Funding for Think comes from SMU Master and Doctor of Liberal Studies programs.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Stephen Becker, and today for Chris Boyd. Think for a second about how much the weather affects your daily life. Is it a day for shorts or for a sweatshirt? Will traffic be jammed because of rain, or will school be canceled because of snow? Each day, Pete Delkus lets us know what to expect tomorrow and whether we should take cover tonight. Delkus has been a meteorologist for more than 20 years, the last 10 at WFAA Channel 8, where he's won 9 Emmys. He joins us this hour to talk about the tricky business of predicting the weather and to take your weather questions. Pete, welcome to Think.
Well, thanks, Stephen. I appreciate it. Good to be here.
So we should probably start by talking about this crazy spring that we had, which included the wettest May ever. Is there any way, in a larger sense, to even explain why we got all of that rain?
Well, I mean, you know, the reason, and there's a number of reasons why, but if you want to look at one big overall reason as to why it was so wet, I mean, everything points to El Nino. And El Nino is just a warming of the water in the equatorial regions of the Pacific. And if you think of the Pacific Ocean, think of the Pacific Ocean like this big cauldron or this big pot of water. And if temperatures in that pot of water are a little warmer than normal, you know, when you start to try to get it to boil, what happens? You have that moisture rising up into the atmosphere. So when the Pacific is just a degree or maybe a degree and a half or even 2 degrees, the equatorial regions, just a degree or two warmer than what is determined the normal over an extended period of time, you have that moisture content rising into the air. And remember, that equatorial region of the Pacific, that's a big area of the globe. And so when that moisture rises up into the air, what it does is it changes the global weather pattern. And the global weather pattern is changed because the jet stream, or that river of air that runs through the upper levels of the atmosphere, that river of air or the jet stream is shifted. So it kind of goes from, you know, it's got a normal location or kind of an average location, if you will, in the winter, an average location in the spring. And that normal or average location shifts. So an area that would typically be dry may be wet. An area that typically may be wet may be dry, because the weather pattern changes. Not only in the United States, we're so U.S.-centric,
sure,
but this is such a global situation, and we have to remember that. But you look at the jet stream shifting, and it just changes the weather pattern across the world. So what does that mean for us here in North Texas and Texas? It means that in the spring, we're going to be wetter than normal, typically cooler than normal. They kind of go together. If you have more above normal precip, what does it take to do that? Clouds. If you have more clouds than normal, you have less sun.
Makes sense.
Right? So temperatures are a little cooler. And that also plays into the winter time too. El Nino affects our weather in the winter. So El Nino has been the big, if you had to pick one thing, there's multiple things, but if you had to pick one large thing, it's been the development of El Nino, of course, in the Pacific, that's really allowed us to have just this crazy spring.
But even you had to have been a little amazed going into work day after day and just seeing for weeks nothing but rain in your forecast.
Amazed is one word. Sick of it probably is another phrase to use. Yeah, I think we all were. There was, 6 to 8 weeks where it was nonstop. We had 60 tornadoes in a little over 6 weeks, 60 confirmed tornadoes in a little over 6 weeks. As you mentioned, the wettest May on record. So, yeah, we were it's like, man, is this ever going to stop? And then you could just see, just a train of storms. They were just lined up out west in the Pacific or on the West Coast, just waiting their turn to come in. And it just, for a long time, it just didn't end.
So all that water that we had, did a lot of it stay in the ground, do you think? Did it evaporate? Where did it go?
It did both. Everyone's like, oh my gosh, it's so humid right now. And I'm like, well, yeah. The sun comes out, the evaporation process begins, and that's what's happened. So you can feel it today. You can see it because the lakes are full. You can see it in the rivers because they're overflowing, even though, many of them have gone down, especially the Trinity, but it's still, near flood stage, give or take a little bit, depending on your point of reference. But it has done both. It's soaked into the ground, it's gone to the lakes, it's gone to the rivers, and a lot of it has evaporated back up into the atmosphere.
people enjoy trying to look at current weather as some sort of predictor of the future. So, for example, you know, we got a lot of rain this spring, so maybe the summer will be mild or something like that. Is there any logic to that sort of like months-long prediction?
Yeah, some, yes. And I've really, the last couple of years, I've gotten into this, it's almost like in investigative meteorology. You can look back at weather, and I love the term when people say, well, it's the wettest ever. Well, what's your definition of ever? You know, here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, ever is 1898. So that's in the grand scheme of the world, that's not a whole lot of time.
Right.
But it's the wettest on record would be more accurate. So it's 100 and some years. But if we can look – and for the United States, you know, a lot of records were kept back in the late 1800s is really when the National Weather Service, the predecessor to that – and I think it was called the Weather Bureau. That started back in the mid to late 1800s. So that's when record keeping really began in the United States. And really for the lower 48, it's really the late 1800s. But anyway, you look at those weather patterns and you can kind of see and we're looking for similarities. So it's almost meteorology CSI, right? Mm. So you're looking at similar patterns like back in the 30s, maybe back in the 50s or back in the 70s. And if you can match those patterns that happened in those years, 30, 40, 50, 80, 90 years ago, and you can see similarities. And if you can see those similarities happen, let's say, hey, back in the 50s, January looked like this. Now, that January in 57 looked like January 2015. Hmm. What happened in February of 57? Looks like we're leaning toward that in February of 2015. So then you see those similarities, and then you kind of match the data, and you can have a real good handle on a weather pattern. You see how it evolved back in the entire year of 1957. So you can match years. Can you take what's happening today and then figure out what's going to happen tomorrow? Sometimes it's easier. It's very difficult to figure out with any level of certainty, precision, like, well, it's going to rain in Dallas today at this time. We can get a handle on an overall weather pattern and see that, you know, we know that there were a lot of similarities in 2015 to 1953 or 1957. Mm-hmm. So it looks like our summer will be cooler than normal. It's hard to pinpoint that on this date, July 13th, we're going to hit 100 degrees. We know that July looks like it's going to be a cooler July than what we normally have, but it's hard. You're good with that, mm-hmm. but we can't pinpoint specific rainfall totals or specific, you know, we could see it's going to be a little warmer than normal, maybe a little cooler than normal, maybe a little wetter than normal, but precision numbers, you can't do that. So there is some of that you can do, but you just got to be careful with the preciseness of it. Sorry for the long answer.
No,
it's kind of a complex subject.
No, it's very interesting. Let's talk a little bit about your typical day. When you're on for, let's say, the early evening news and the 10 o'clock broadcast, when you come in, what's the first thing that you're looking at in terms of trying to get your head around what you're going to be telling us about the weather?
Well, I have a pretty abnormal day. My day, unfortunately, begins about 6 o'clock in the morning, only because I'm older and I just get up. But so I get up at 6 in the morning, and the first thing that I do once I get ready is I go sit down at my computer, and I look at Twitter.
You're big on Twitter.
I love Twitter. And I love Twitter because it's a clearinghouse for all these different weather sites that I like to follow. It's a clearinghouse for news sites. And I'm a news junkie. My bachelor's degree is in television radio communication. So I love news. I love current events. But I wake up and look at Twitter to find out what's the latest that's happened in the world since I went to bed 5 hours ago. And what's the latest that's changed in the weather data over the last 5 hours. So I look at that. I get a handle on what's going on in the world, what's going on in the weather world as well. And then I get on about four or five different sites, pay sites where I get different types of weather data, computer models. Mm. And I look at all of the data that's come in overnight. So I kind of put that in my head. And then I go to the gym and I work out, make a few phone calls to work, usually about 7:30 to 8 o'clock. Here's what's going on. This is where our focus needs to be today. Flooding maybe in Comanche County, heavy rain off to the west, or maybe it's just hot. So what are we going to do with our resources today? Where are we going to put our people? What's our story going to be? We kind of get all that figured out before 9 o'clock in the morning. And then I'm usually home from the gym an hour and a half later or so. And then I kind of start putting the story together a little bit more. There's some new data that may have come in. I look at that. So about the time I walk into work about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I literally have done everything except go on TV.
Wow.
I record radio from my house. I do our website stuff from my house. I do all my social media, Twitter, Facebook, and all of that throughout the morning, just kind of on and off throughout the morning from the house. So by the time the 5 o'clock news starts, I literally just need to go on TV. And, you know, and I look at more data as the afternoon comes on, moves along, and I talk to our producers in the afternoon. But we've all talked multiple times throughout the morning. So that's kind of my day.
So how much coordination is there between you and the other meteorologists on staff as far as, like, putting forward a message that links up, you know? If you think the weather's going to be A and you want to make sure that everyone else kind of has a similar message.
Yeah, and I, for example, I've already talked to meteorologist Colleen Coyle this morning, and Ashton Altieri. We've already talked about our game plan this afternoon, but it's funny. I've been here for 10 years. Greg Fields has been at the station for, I think, 17 years. You know, we've all worked together long enough now. It's kind of funny. They all know what I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. So we have these brief conversations on and off throughout the day, but they already know, well, we knew Pete was going to want to do this, or Pete's going to want to have this or that element in the show. So a lot of this is unspoken stuff because we've all been together for so long, which makes for some nice synergy with a team.
You all frequently mention the computer models. Computer models are showing, you know, A or B. What exactly are those computer models, and how do they work?
Yeah, it's funny. So every meteorologist, you know, that any person that wants to be meteorologist can have access to these computer models. And the United States government, many countries, I should say, have their own data that comes out to forecast what they think. So you have the European, the UK Meteorological Society has theirs. We just call it the European. There's the US government. We have ours. Japan has theirs. Australia has theirs. China has theirs, and so on. And within each governmental body, you have dozens of different things to look at. It may be temperature profiles. It may be atmospheric profiles of moisture. It may be any number of different things that we have to look at. So, you know, all of us meteorologists in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, we're all looking at the same set of data every day. Now, how do we interpret it? You and I can read the exact same book and have a different conclusion, right?
Sure.
So it's all opinion-based. But what matters is everyone's, oh, you looked at the computer models and it told you the high today was going to be 101. Well, I wish it was that easy, because I've got about 15 different options and they all have a different number that they're coming up with. And a lot of it's mathematical formulas, so you're running all these equations throughout the day to figure out what's going to happen. But through experience, you mentioned I've been doing this over 20 years, which is hard to believe. I started in 92, so, you know, 23 plus now. But, you know, through experience, it's like, you know, in this situation, this model handles this weather pattern better. So you start to rely on that. And maybe you favor this one because you know that's a better one to go with in this weather pattern. So the models are great, and each government across the world, most of them have models for us to look at. But experience helps you determine which ones are the better ones to use. Some are better in the spring, some are better in the summer, some are better in the winter. And then what are you forecasting? Heat, snow, ice, thunderstorms? You know, just depends. But there's a lot of options for us to use today.
My guest today is Pete Delkus, Chief Meteorologist at WFAA Channel 8. We're talking about North Texas weather, and you can join the conversation by calling 800-933-5372. You can send us an email to think@kera.org. We'll be back in just a minute.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program. You can apply now for fall and design your own master's degree at SMU, a customizable evening master's degree for working professionals. More at smu.edu/mls.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Stephen Becker, and today for Chris Boyd, and my guest is Pete Delkus, Channel 8 Chief Meteorologist. We're talking about North Texas weather. You can join our conversation at 800-933-5372 or shoot us an email to think@kera.org. So, Pete, we were talking about long-term forecasting earlier, but I also find it interesting that weather has become this exercise in micro-predicting. It's no longer enough just to let people know the highs and lows for the day and what the rain chances are. It's this hour-by-hour business. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, I mean, you mentioned when we started this that, and I remind Dale Hansen, our sports guy, of this every day, the only thing in our newscast every day that has an impact on every single person watching or not watching is the weather. Not sports, but weather. And so people are so fascinated with it, and now that we all have access, because, I mean, you can log on and go to any number of different sites. So everyone at home, let me just say this, everyone thinks they're a meteorologist now.
I bet.
And so that's good and bad, because everyone, they want to hear what we have to say. They want to look at the data that we have on our website. But then all these questions arise. And, you know, it's taken me 20-some years to figure out, oh, my gosh, don't use that computer model in that situation, because that burned me, you know, 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. And what a disaster that was. But a lot of folks don't have that experience to know the difference. And so then it leads to us answering a lot of questions. So that's one thing. And the other thing is the fascination with it was why I brought that point up, which I love, that everyone loves the business and the world that I live in. But we're all now, we have access to so much. And it since it does affect our lives, we want to know what's it going to do hour by hour. Because in today's world, we're all busy. And we've got this small window of time every day to go out and do whatever it is we're going to do. Take the kids to school, go play golf. I want to know from 10 to 2 when I'm teeing off, is rain going to move in?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, people do have this fascination and this want of that information. So these hourly forecasts have become extremely important to people. But I want to caution them that we're better today than we were even 5 years ago, certainly better today than we were 10 years ago, but we still have a long way to go. And Gloria Campos one time, so when I started here, you know, a little over 10 years ago, I started doing this thing called the 7-day forecast. Mm-hmm. And she said, oh my gosh, you're doing a 7-day forecast. How accurate is that? And I said, well, it's as accurate as the 5-day forecast. And it's true, you know. So people want this information, and they want it now, and they want to know how it's going to impact their lives. And they want it in an hourly form.
I think of all the times that I've seen, there's a chance of rain in the afternoon on Saturday, so I better mow the lawn before, you know, 2 o'clock. And it's pretty amazing how 2 o'clock comes, and sure enough, there's the rain.
Well, I appreciate that endorsement, but sometimes it's not – we're not – and here's the thing, you know, we talk about there's several things that we have not in the world of meteorology, we have not done a great job in educating people with. So we talk about the rain chances. So we're not giving you Vegas odds on, mm-hmm. on, you know, hey, it's 3-1 that it's going to rain. You know, we're telling you that when we say 30%. We're saying 30% of the area, and our area is 44 counties. We're saying 30% of the area will see rain. Now, you're in Dallas County, okay? And now I have 44 counties to forecast. So if it rains in Denton County, let's say it rains in Wise County, and it pours in Montague County, you're looking at me like Pete doesn't know what he's talking about. And I'm like, well, it's just, and you know, it's rained in 30%, and I can show you the map, but it didn't rain at my house.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, Stephen, I love you, but buddy, it's not all about you. It's about these 44 counties. I know it didn't rain at your house, but that doesn't mean that we were wrong. But in your eyes, we were. And I can argue all day long until the cows come home that, well, you know, sorry, but this is what 30% means. So shame on us for not doing a better job at explaining what some of these meteorological terms mean. So that the rain chance, we're not giving you odds that it's going to rain. We're telling you if we say 50% chance of rain, 50% of the 100% will see measurable rain. And people a lot of times also confuse. They say, well, you said it was a 70% chance of rain, and I only picked up a tenth of an inch at my house. That was right. So rain chances and rainfall totals are apples and oranges. They're both fruit, but they're completely two different things.
Let's talk about actually delivering the weather report during the newscast. How many minutes do you typically have on, let's just say, a normal weather night without any severe threat?
It varies on each newscast. At 5 o'clock, I have 4 minutes. At 6 o'clock, I have 3 minutes and 30 seconds. And at 10 o'clock, I have 3 minutes and 15 seconds.
And that's a lot of space to cover in just a few minutes.
And I always tell the producers every day, it's not enough time.
So you normally start out over by the anchor desk and stroll over. There's a sort of green screen on the background, mm-hmm. I suppose, with weather maps and your outlook and things like that. Are you actually controlling what's happening behind you?
Yeah.
Are you seeing it in front of you? Or how's that? Because it's amazing how you're able to stay out of the way of what you need to show.
Yeah. Let me try my best to paint a picture here on the radio. But what we do is I have a little clicker. It's just like a little garage door clicker. And honestly, a couple of years ago, it was a Genie garage door clicker. It's not anymore. But it's like a little garage door opener. And it's wireless remote to our – it would be like a presentation. I'm at a loss for the term here, the word. When you do a presentation.
Oh, like a
PowerPoint. PowerPoint. Okay. That's exactly what it is. So it's our system's designed like a PowerPoint presentation. So we make the maps, we load them into the system, and then we just press the little clicker, and it advances from one map to the next.
Okay.
So how I know where to stand is I'm looking in the camera, and in the camera, the news anchors read the scripts. Well, they have a little button that they push, and it changes it over from the scripts that the anchors can read to where I'm just seeing myself. It just becomes a little TV. So I'm just looking in the camera, and all I'm doing is seeing myself standing there. And those maps through the chroma key process, that's the green screen, it's called chroma key, and they're able to put those maps behind me. So when I look at the wall, the green wall or the chroma key wall, all I'm seeing is green. But in the corner of each wall, you have little TVs. And they're just little 15, 16-inch or whatever, just TVs. And I can see myself to the right, to the left, or on the camera. And so just through practice, I just know where to put my hand and finger. If I'm talking about Dallas, I just make sure I'm not standing on Dallas.
Yeah.
And I can just see where I'm standing, so I can just move around as need be.
Now, when severe weather is in the forecast, we could be about ready to head into World War III, and severe weather is going to be at the top of the newscast.
Mm-hmm.
What's the criteria for you when working with the other folks on the newscast to say, look, we really need to start with weather today?
Well, severe weather, the definition of severe weather is this and only this. Tornadoes, that's severe weather. Winds from a thunderstorm of 58 miles an hour or stronger, and hail, 1 inch in diameter, quarter in diameter or larger. That's severe weather. Thunder and lightning, it's not severe weather. Flooding is not severe weather.
And snow?
Snow is not severe weather. So the definition is just those three things. So people are like, oh my gosh, how come you're not on TV? I have 30 mile an hour winds at my house and it's raining like crazy. I'm like, well, that's not severe weather. Mm. So severe weather is something that could kill people. Okay, so they came up with that definition of hail back in the Wright brothers' days, and I'm totally serious, that they, when airplane wings were made out of cloth, they determined that a certain size hailstone would break the cloth that those wings were made up of. So they determined that that could create problems. So that's hail. And then, of course, your winds of 58 or stronger, that's when you're going to have structures that can't withstand that. Anything less, most structures that are of decent construct are able to withstand that kind of stuff. So people are like, oh my gosh, it's lightning. Well, I'm sorry, that's not severe. So severe weather, if we have severe weather, I let the producers know, our news director, assistant news director know, hey, we have a chance of tornado, severe winds, or large hail. And, here in Texas, we can have baseball, softball size hail pretty quickly. So that's when people's lives are threatened. So that's when we go on. And we'll lead the newscast with that because, once again, it's back to the beginning of our conversation. This is the only thing that impacts every single person that's watching or not watching.
On those big weather days, the kind where you're maybe even breaking into regular programming before the newscast, Do you ever think about, like, so I'm, as the viewer, I see you and you've got your sleeves rolled up and maybe the tie's loosened, jacket's off. Do you ever think about the kind of visual cues you're giving to a viewer? Because when I see when I see that picture of you, I think, oh boy, it's about to get dicey. Yeah. The sleeves are rolled up.
Yeah, it's funny. People are like, why do you take your jacket? You take your jacket off because you're showing off and you want us to know you're busy. I say, well, you know, and I had a woman who was a psychologist. She called me one time and she was telling me how arrogant that was of me to do it. I said, and she fully analyzed me. And I'm like, well, that's interesting. You've taken a lot of time to do this. I said, do you think, and you can verify this here when I tell you, and I think you're going to nod your head in agreement. It could either be that, or maybe it's something as simple as maybe I'm hot. So what did I just ask you a few minutes ago? Can you turn the air conditioning down?
Turn the air on a little bit. Yeah.
So when I'm moving around and talking and doing all of this stuff, I just get hot. So you can think that I'm being arrogant, or I want you to think I'm a hard worker, or any number of other things, but I'm a pretty simple guy, and I take my jacket off because I'm hot.
We have a question in from the email box from Felipe, who says, how does the cap affect the weather in DFW?
Ah, that's a good question. So the cap... What the cap is, or the cap is kind of a layman's term that we love to use because it's really illustrative of what that is, or the elevated mixed layer, or in temperature inversion. All of those three things all mean the same thing. The cap, the atmosphere cools with height, right? So the higher you go up from the ground all the way up out into space, the atmosphere progressively gets colder. When you have a temperature inversion, you'll have cool, cool, cool as you rise, and then you'll get to a certain level, maybe 8,000 feet up in the air, and you'll get a warm layer of air. So you've got that cap. And what that cap does, a cap on our atmosphere here in North Texas, it prevents thunderstorms from developing. So think of that. You have cool as you go up 1,000, 2,000 feet, and all of a sudden at 5,000 feet or 8,000 feet, somewhere around 5 to 10, you get this warm layer of air. And that warm layer of air could be a couple of thousand feet thick, a couple thousand feet deep. And so keep that in mind. So what do you need for thunderstorms to develop? You need air that cools as it rises, and you need these thunderstorms to be able to tower up. We've all seen the towering cumulus clouds that stretch 40, 50,000 feet up in the atmosphere. They're really cool looking, right? Well, if you have a cap at 10,000 feet, those clouds will rise, and then all of a sudden there's the cap that kind of shuts them off. It prevents them from rising any higher. So the thunderstorms to develop, they need to rise with height. If they can't rise, you're not going to get any thunderstorms to develop. Now, the cap, or that warm layer of air aloft, originates on the high plateaus in northern Mexico. So those plateaus in northern Mexico are around 5, 6,000 feet high. So that warm air, when we get a warm southwest breeze, we get that warm air that's right off those plateaus in northern Mexico. Where does it go? It goes right across West Texas, and it makes a beeline. Remember, it's southwest off to northeast, moves from West Texas, Abilene area, out around the Big Bend, up to Abilene, Midland, Odessa, Big Spring. What's next? Dallas, Fort Worth. So it puts a cap on top of us. And you say, well, why doesn't that cap shut down the thunderstorms in Oklahoma or maybe in Arkansas or places like that? Well, that warm air just kind of runs out of gas, and there's no cap up in Oklahoma. Maybe there's no cap in northeast Texas or Arkansas or parts of southwestern Missouri. So that cap is in essence, puts a lid on the atmosphere, and it prevents thunderstorm development. It can be great. You'll have a massive tornado outbreak in Oklahoma, no cap. We don't have a drop of rain here because we've had a cap. Hmm. We've had a cap the last 5 years. That's part of the reason that we had the drought, that multi-year drought. The cap and that warm air was just in place for so long. This spring, there was no cap. We had a lot of rain. Does that answer that question?
Yeah, for sure. And is that related to it all? I mean, of course, this area is known as being fertile ground for tornadoes, particularly in the spring. Why is it that North Texas is particularly at risk for tornadoes?
Well, North Texas more so than Central Texas, because where is Central Texas closer to?
The Gulf of Mexico.
Well, the origination of the cap. You go Austin out to Hill Country and out west. The cap is stronger there. It's deeper. So thunderstorms, so the farther away you get from the source region of the cap, the more likely you're going to have tornadoes develop in the springtime, that clash of the warm air, the cool air, the Gulf moisture, the dry air, and all that stuff. So when you get farther away from the source region of the cap, you're going to have more tornadoes. So we're kind of on the southern edge of Tornado Alley here, but you get up into Oklahoma, southern Oklahoma, central Oklahoma, northern Oklahoma, there's no cap. So you can kind of see, if we drew a map, you can see the cap kind of shuts everything down here, limits it somewhat, but there's no limit on the cap and what it can do in Oklahoma.
Let's go to the phones and talk to Keith in Dallas. Thanks. Keith, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure. Go right ahead.
Mr. Delkus, you probably don't have, maybe you've probably heard this. Yeah, years ago at Channel 5, there was a legendary weatherman named Harold Taft.
Oh, Keith, I've been here for over 10 years. How could I not know of Harold
True.
Taft?
Good point. Good point, because if you're in your business, you had to have heard of him. But he was absolutely adamant that it was a joke to have a forecast beyond 3 days. And all the stations started to go to five-day forecast. And Channel 5, he said, as long as I'm the head guy here, we're not going to a far forecast beyond 3 days. And they did not do that until he retired. And I just wondered, what is your personal, not filtered by management, opinion of seven-day forecast?
That's funny. Well, I said just a few minutes ago, I tell you what, David Finfrock over at Channel 5 is one of the nicest men I've ever met in my entire life. And David was the protege of Harold, right? And they do a seven-day forecast over there now. And David's an outstanding meteorologist, Texas A&M guy. I mean, he's really good at what he does. They do a seven-day forecast over there now. You know what we didn't have, what Harold didn't have that we have today, it's the computer technology. Mm-hmm. So I told Gloria, 9 years ago, she goes, oh, my gosh, you're going to do a seven-day forecast? How accurate is that? And I said, well, it's as accurate as the five-day forecast, and that was 9 years ago. I mean, I was telling people back, at the end of the winter that, our first part of our spring was going to be cooler and wetter than normal. Now, I could not have known that it was going to be as wet as it was and as cool as it was, but it was trending in that direction. So we have those forecasts today, and I think they're necessary. Number one, people demand them. We have the technology to create them. And we've proven over time that they're pretty darn good, and they will only get better.
My guest today is Pete Delkus. We'll be back in just a minute with more of your questions about North Texas weather. You can join the conversation at 800-933-5372 or by sending email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from the SMU Master of Liberal Studies program. You can apply now for fall and design your own master's degree at SMU, specializing in communications or organizational dynamics. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Stephen Becker, and today for Chris Boyd, and my guest is Channel 8 Chief Meteorologist Pete Delkus. We are talking about North Texas weather. We're taking your calls at 800-933-5372, or you can send us an email to think@kera.org. And Pete, we've talked a lot about predicting severe weather and thunderstorms, things like that. Tell me what it's like when we're in the middle of August and it's going to be, tomorrow it's going to be a high of 100 and low of 80 and yep. no rain in the forecast and probably the same the next day.
One word, heaven.
Really?
After this
so not
spring,
boring.
After this spring, spring was like hell. This coming summer, I cannot wait for the first 100-degree day to hit because it'll be nice.
And there's a chance that first 100-degree day might be this weekend.
Yeah, right? Well, it looks like Monday we'll probably get there. We'll be very close on Monday or Tuesday of next week. So it's funny, I mentioned a moment ago to you, Stephen, I have a couple buddies that have texted me that they've been listening to us this morning. One of them, Clay Huffstutter, texted me. He said, I hear you on the radio. He goes, I might call in. I said, you can only call in if you have an intelligent question to ask. I don't know if that's deterring him or not. So anyway.
So we were talking about predicting things like tornadoes and thunderstorms. One of the things I've also been really interested in is your ability in the midst of a big thunderstorm's rolling across. And in the last few years, we've been getting the actual minute-by-minute forecast. It's going to hit this county at 10:45. Mm-hmm. It'll cross I-35 at 10:56. That's really amazing, that level of precision.
Well, you look at how these storms move, and I'm a map guy. I love maps. I love geography. And so I'm really into that. And so I like to look at these storms and I like to look at the speed and then quickly do the math and figure out, because here's how I look at when I'm doing the weather and I'm forecasting severe weather. That could be my family. You know, that could be my friends. Those could be my relatives. So I've got an obligation. I have a responsibility to let you know when it's going to get there because it could hurt you. And, you know, and if you have that mindset, and you should in my business, then you want to do everything you can to help that person out, right? So I look at this stuff and I figure out, okay, we know the most of these storms move generally, and there's some variance, but generally west to east. And the average speed is about 30 miles an hour. So we know that from county seat to county seat, most counties in Texas, you know, just look at a Texas county map. Many of them are square, certainly in West Texas, Dallas-Fort Worth area and west, most of them are square. County seat to county seat is 30 miles. And that was when they put the state together way back when, and they put the county seats in place, they did them at 30-mile distances because they knew that you could do your commerce in one day's horse and buggy ride. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
I learned that from the great Troy Dungan. So they set these counties up. You could ride your horse and wagon. You could take your horse and wagon and take your food or whatever it was, and you could do business in the next county, and you could get there in one day. That's how long it took you. So all these counties are 30 miles apart. Think of thunderstorms. They generally move from west to east by about 30 miles an hour. That's 1 hour.
Okay.
So you can just start adding up the counties. And I know when some of our younger meteorologists started here, they're like, oh, my gosh, how did you figure out that's going to arrive in Fort Worth in 7 hours? And I would joke and I wouldn't tell them finally later that day. I said, here's the formula. And they're like, oh, my gosh. And I said, use it. You're going to be shocked at how accurate it is. And it's really, really good.
To be a meteorologist, you also have to kind of be an expert in geography.
Well, and fortunately, those are some of the things that are – I've always loved the weather, and I definitely love geography. I like to – you know, I love just everything about it, even geology. I'm into that. So I just love things about the Earth and its atmosphere, and I think that helps me in what I do.
Let's go back to the phones and talk to Merrill in Fort Worth. Merrill, thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you. You're doing a great job of explaining things like the cap and the jet stream. I wonder if you could explain what the dry line is and the dew point.
There you go. Well, and you know, Merrill, those are two great questions. And the dry line, and I think Merrill was probably, she's alluding to this in her question. The dry line is another feature, another surface feature. A surface feature would be a cold front, a warm front. But the dry line is another surface feature that triggers thunderstorms in our part of the world. So the dry line, a cold front is just it's the line of demarcation. It's the dividing line, a cold front is, between warm air and cold air. Okay, same with a warm front. A dry line is the dividing line or the line of demarcation between dry air and moist air. So you have, what do we have? That conflict of two different types of air masses here in Texas. We have the very arid climate out to the west, the dry air. We have that moist Gulf of Mexico air. And where those two really come together, where they merge, that's where we'll have a dry line. And that dry line will kind of slosh or move back and forth West Texas. It'll kind of move into east into North Texas. So that dry line is an additional feature here that helps trigger thunderstorms. We may not have a cold front or a warm front, but we'll have a dry line that will help initiate that thunderstorm development. And if the thunderstorms can break through the cap, boom, we have severe weather. So that's what a dry line is. The dew point temperature, and the dew point temperature is critical for us here because the humidity, it's relative. So relative humidity, what's it relative to? Well, it's relative to the air temperature. So the relative humidity, by definition, changes throughout the day as the air temperature goes up or goes down. The dew point temperature is more of a constant, and the dew point temperature is the true measure of moisture in the air. And when we're looking at thunderstorm development or we're looking at a severe weather situation, I'm really focused on what's our dew point temperature? What's the moisture content in the atmosphere? So the dew point temperature tells us that, and that's a more precise definition of moisture content. Because again, the humidity relative to the air temperature, that just changes throughout the day.
Another figure we normally get during the forecast is the barometric pressure. Why do we care about barometric pressure?
Well, the barometer tells us what type of air mass we have in place, what type is in place, and maybe what type is moving away or what type is moving in. High pressure, so when the barometer's high, we have high pressure. What's high pressure? High pressure is a sinking of the air in the atmosphere. Remember we talked about the cap? If the thunderstorms can't rise in height, then they can't form, they can't develop. High pressure acts like a huge lid or a huge cap on the atmosphere. It causes a sinking in the air, as I'm pushing my hands down, it causes a sinking in the air which prevents clouds from rising. It prevents thunderstorms from developing. So when the barometer's high, hey, high pressure's in control, it's going to be pretty hard for us to have thunderstorms develop. If the air or the barometer is starting to sink, now we have rising air in the atmosphere. Low pressure's moving in. It causes the barometer to drop because it's low pressure. The barometer starts to drop. That allows the air starts to rise. And remember, if the air can rise, we'll have clouds form, and if everything's just right, we can have rain develop that way. So the barometer is a very important factor, a good tool that we need to use as well.
You've been doing the weather here in North Texas for more than 10 years now. Is there any particular day that sticks out to you as just like, man, that was one nutty day for trying to predict and deliver the weather?
Yeah, I think back to the and I can't remember the exact day, but I know a lot of folks will. It was May, I believe. But we had 18 tornadoes that day. And it was the day that we had, I think it was 3 years ago. Remember we had those tractor trailers flying through the air?
Mm-hmm.
And I had a little monitor in the TV, in the studio, and I wasn't exactly sure what was flying through the air. And then I realized when I looked at a bigger monitor in the studio that we had a we had that tornado. I knew it was on the ground, but I just didn't know what it was hitting. I couldn't tell due to that small monitor. When I looked over at a big monitor, I was like, oh my gosh, that's like where trailers are stored. You know, these truck trailers are stored, and those trailers are being lifted up. And then those big concrete highway dividers were being turned over. And that's when you know you have something serious on your hand, and that's when you know people's lives are at risk. That's something I'll never forget.
Has there ever been a night where you've had to spend the night at the station?
Like what, in the last 2 weeks? I had eight of those this spring.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, and actually,
have a cot set up?
Actually,
or how's
no, I tried that a long time ago. I went into the green room, and I laid down, and I fell asleep for about an hour. Then I woke up, and I was in a fog. There were eight nights this spring where I went home about midnight. I took a quick shower, shaved, put on a clean suit, laid down for 15 minutes, and came right back to work. So that's kind of part of the deal.
Man.
Yeah.
What's the difference between...
That's why I'm looking forward to the sunny and 100-degree
it's
day,
It's all
Stephen.
Coming together now. What's the difference between a warning and a watch?
Ah, good question. A warning, it's happening right now. Look out. A warning means it's happening. A watch means conditions are favorable. It could happen. So a watch means it could happen. A warning means it's happening. That's the basic difference, and that's all you ever need to remember.
How often do you hear from listeners who maybe don't feel like what happened is what they thought was going to happen, or they take you to task about, you know, we talked about the 30% chance.
Yeah.
How often does that happen?
Like three times today already.
Really?
That's the beauty of Facebook and Twitter is people can tell you. And I love hearing people say, oh, Pete, you missed this or you got this right. And I actually enjoy the ones where people are giving me a hard time because that's my personality. But no, I hear that all the time. People are like, oh, you missed this. I'm like, well, hold on a second. Let me send you a clip of what I actually said, because the beauty of it is, you know, we have all this stuff recorded, and there's plenty of times that we don't get this part of the forecast right or we don't get that right. But then there's sometimes people just didn't hear it correctly, you know, because you're busy at home, you're doing whatever, and you're getting dinner ready or you're talking to the kids or you're petting your dog and you turn for a second and you miss something. My brother, I'm from the St. Louis area. My brother has a landscaping business, and I'll sit there with him and we'll watch the local weather guys up in St. Louis. And he's got things going through his mind with his business and he's busy. But I'm like, no. He said, did you believe that? He said, it's going to rain all day tomorrow. I'm like, no, he didn't. And he said, no. And I'm like, Jamie, you weren't listening. It's, hey, there's two jobs here. Mine is to tell you, yours is to listen. So, you know, there's a part of that too. But I love the fact that we have Twitter and Facebook, and you can tell me right away. And you know, that's helpful. It truly is helpful. I like to hear that. And sometimes people give us some great ideas. Have you talked about this? What about this area? Those kind of things are important to hear. We get immediate feedback on how well we're doing or how poorly we're doing. And I like both of them.
We should mention you are at WFAA Weather on Twitter, which is a very fun Twitter feed to follow. You ever get the sense that people feel like almost like you control the weather?
It's funny. You know, when we had all of these school closings this winter.
You're a lot of people's hero.
I had all these kids convinced that I was closing schools. It was hilarious. We would find out, you know, because you knew it was snowing or it was freezing rain in this area, and it was a lot. And I'm like, there's no way they're not going to cancel, you know, the Frisco School District tomorrow. So I would tell the kids, hey, if you're real nice to me, I'll cancel school for you tomorrow. Then, you know, 30 minutes later, Frisco ISD puts out schools canceled. The kids think I'm a hero, and I'm sitting in the Weather Center just dying laughing, you know.
You originally had plans to be a professional baseball player. I know you were in the Twins organization. Is that right?
That was a long time ago.
So were you as interested in the weather back then? And what was that like, particularly being a pitcher and knowing a little bit about the weather and how rain delays work into baseball games?
Well, I'm old enough now to remember when the Weather Channel started. So I grew up in a family. My dad, I'm from Collinsville, Illinois. My dad worked for the street department in the town that I grew up in. And he developed this little business that when he got off work, I'm the oldest of three boys. Us boys would go out. It was a landscaping, lawn maintenance business. And we'd go cut grass. Mm. So dad would take us. He said, I had three boys, so you three can go out and do this work with me. So he would take us out and we would go cut grass. We would do landscaping. So our lives revolved around weather, because if it was raining or storming or whatever, we couldn't go to work. My dad plowed snow in the wintertime, being from the Midwest. That's what he did. He worked for the street department. So, and then I, you know, my whole life, all I did was play sports. So if you think about it, Stephen, my whole life has always revolved around being outside. If you're going to be outside, you think of these landscapers, these guys that pour concrete. I mean, this is what they do. They're at the mercy of Mother Nature. So knowing that, I've always had a fascination with weather. And then, you know, I got into college and, oh my gosh, this thing called the Weather Channel. I'd sit there and watch the radar. You know, I'm like, the radar, this is fascinating stuff. And I would watch that. Then I as college moved on, I played pro ball for 6 years and the weather was more important. And then my bachelor's degree was in television radio and I thought I'd be a sports guy. And I had the opportunity in summer of 1992 to start doing weather in Orlando at the ABC station there. And the guy said, will you do it? And I'm like, well, I don't know anything about it. He goes, I think you can do TV. We'll send you to school to get a degree in meteorology. And I'm like, okay, I'm newly married. I need a job. And I loved the weather. And I thought, why not? Now, I'm not one of these guys that grew up and I was sitting in my backyard and I saw a tornado when I was 8 years old and I had an epiphany that I wanted to be a meteorologist when I grew up. But weather has always been such an important part of my life and obviously still is today. I've always been fascinated with it. And as I got older, it just really, it has become my life. And I love it.
We've got just about a few seconds. Do you think you could give us a quick forecast for today?
Oh, well, I'm going mostly cloudy today, a 30% chance of rain, a high temperature of about 89, sunshine tomorrow, and a high temperature of 92. After the rain this afternoon, whatever ends this evening, it's dry Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 100-degree temperatures, first of the year, the early part of next week.
You heard it here first. Pete Dalkus is chief meteorologist for WFAA Channel 8. Pete, thanks so much for joining
us
today.
You're welcome.
Think is produced by yours truly and engineered by Shelley Canavy. Jose Carrion answered your calls. Lindsay Connect is associate producer. And Jeff Whittington is executive producer. Once again, I'm Stephen Becker. Thanks for listening and have a great day.